today on Doomed! From alt-right to Groiper. White nationalists are rebranding. Well, they have been, actually. The Groiper movement has been slowly building up a substantial little base for itself while we're paying attention to everything else. Today on the show, Devin Burghardt, president of the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, joins the show to break down the Groiper movement. Who's their leader or leaders? What they're all about, and what we'll see coming from them in the near future. Let us pull myself and Devin up on the feed here. And Devin, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Matt? How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay as well. You know, I have to send, of course, greetings from the Northwest Anarchist Jurisdiction, you know, to our comrades out in the out east. But, you know, aside from that, you know, it's all sunshine and lollipops out here.
Right. You're talking to a fellow anarchist jurisdiction brethren here in New York City. We are in utter turmoil. The stream is put together by tin cans, soup cans, by the way, and bumblebee tuna cans.
I would expect nothing less.
I've put them all together, and we're broadcasting through that because the anarchists have taken down the Verizon Fios building. We don't have any connection anymore with the outside world. Broadband speed is extremely low, as you can see from our low quality 4K offerings. Very low quality on the video feed.
Well, you know, that's a good thing because, you know, if we had that 5G up and running, then it would cause, you know, the COVID-19 to, you know, trigger the vaccine, which would then turn us all into one race. So, you know, we got that safely out of the way. We can march forward to victory.
Right. Speaking of coronavirus, I mean, last time you were on, we were discussing your report on how the white supremacist movements were taking advantage of the coronavirus. I assume they're still doing that.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like forever ago that we were talking about that. But, you know, in the court, after doing your show, we got what I think was a bit of the Binder bump. You know, we got coverage in the New York Times and the Washington Post and a whole
Clearly the Binder bump. That's all because of the Binder bump, right?
Yeah, absolutely. At least I'm going to attribute it as such. But they have been incredibly active at trying to utilize this chaotic period to try to both bolster their ranks and or encourage some kind of an upcoming conflict. It has frankly been impossible to keep track of all the activities that are going on the ground. And, you know, it's a period unlike I've ever seen. And it's in that instance, it's really worrying for the short term, but also kind of paying attention what happens after November and how this stuff plays out is going to be a big thing for all of us to start thinking about and considering, you know, what this looks like going forward, irrespective of the results.
Right. And we all know as of now that the results possibly might not even matter.
Yeah. Well, there is that. Yeah, there is that absolute contingency. And there are, you know, militia groups and others like we talked about last time who are kind of preparing for that scenario and looking for, you know, kind of marching orders to get on the streets to either slow down recounts or to, you know, essentially be a Brooks Brothers riot in fatigues and body armor, you know, or to prepare for the civil war that's kicked off from there. So, yeah, it's, you know, cheery times.
Right. Sounds great. So excuse me. I told you before we went live that I am trying to suppress this cough. I will try my best during this episode.
Of course. No worries.
So I had you on the show because, in fact, before we even talked about the came on the show to talk about the coronavirus and white supremacists taking advantage of it to push their agenda. You had put out this great report about the Groiper movement. Yeah. And I wanted you to come on then to talk about it, but then the coronavirus hit, and it seemed like the other episode made more sense to do because it seemed more pressing. But now that we're sort of heading towards the election, and there's all different sorts of right-wing groups coming out of the woodwork, and of course the rise of the QAnon conspiracy really taking over everything to the point where these white supremacist groups are probably jealous about it. They probably wish they were taking up as much as the press as QAnon is.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They don't know what to do with it, frankly. They're just as shocked by it as I think the rest of us are that it caught on the way it did and is, you know, has kind of taken a taken hold in constituencies where they've been really unsuccessful at reaching, you know, soccer moms and the, you know, the whole, you know, the whole kind of online mom culture that exists on Facebook and places like that, where they're reaching audiences that never have been attracted to the stuff that Nick Fuentes and his ilk are doing. So I think they're sitting back, taking notes, trying to figure out, okay, you know, who are our messengers? How do we get to those crowds? How do we get into that space? You know, because they know that they've got to figure out how to expand their movement. And the other thing that they're also thinking about is longevity, you know, keeping this stuff going on long past, you know, their existing. While most of them are Zoomers, they're thinking about also starting to think about the next generation and how they get involved.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they should have thought that if you just convince the wine moms, the soccer moms, the health and moms, the anti-vaxxer moms, that there are child trafficking rings stealing children off the streets and forcing them into all sorts of different types of situations, then, yeah, they could have been just as big as QAnon. Of course, the satanic stuff, too. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, makes perfect sense. In 2020, I guess it does, but yeah, it's insane what we're living through. But yeah.
Now I just want to note that I'm getting hardcore feedback in my headphones now. I don't know why that is. From myself, if do people on the feed hear that? I just want to, because if so, I'll try to edit it out later on. But we'll just roll with it right now because it seems like it's a Skype thing. Anyway, though, let's get right into the Groypers.
Right on.
First of all, for people who are tuning in, have never heard of this group before, let's let them in on this little secret, I guess. Who are the Groypers?
Well, you know, it's really a great time to be talking about it because, you know, this week, I'm sure you probably know that the trial for one of the leading advocates in Charlottesville started, the so-called crying Nazi Chris Cantwell. His trial is starting for the kind of violence that happened in the wake of that. And that was the kind of moment in which was the death knell for what had become the alt-right, you know, the kind of constellation of groups that had, you know, formed around things like Gamergate, as well as the kind of white nationalist posturing of folks like Richard Spencer. And that stuff all came to a crashing halt, primarily around Charlottesville. In the wake of that, some of those participants at Charlottesville were looking for a way to kind of rebrand the kind of ideas of racism and anti-Semitism and kind of hardcore white nationalism into something else. And, you know, they came up with this idea, once again, borrowing from the kind of conspiracy culture that exists on the Chans and developing what they called the Groypers. You know, they were trying to rebrand the alt-right as something a little bit different. In this case, it was, again, more explicitly white nationalist. It was more explicitly homophobic and misogynist. And it was an effort to try to take the kind of shitposting culture that existed in the larger Chan world and bring that into the real world and attack conservatives who you would think they might agree with, but wanted to, in essence, move that Overton window and create space for themselves within the larger Trump context. So you had folks like Nick Fuentes, a white nationalist influencer, if you will, who carved out initially a space for himself on YouTube, now has his own channel promoting, doing a nightly show, which is half white nationalist routine, half comedy act. And you have folks like Patrick Casey, who runs the American Identity Movement, which used to be Identity Europa, and another number of other figures who all kind of came together to create this network of folks who were going to both to try to mainstream white nationalism, but do so in a way that was adversarial to other folks in the conservative movement. So they really chose a few targets in their place where they were having the most influence, and that is on college campuses. So they looked around and decided that Charlie Kirk was going to be their big target. And they, starting in 2019, relentlessly harassed him and others like him, you know, around issues like immigration and race to try to, I think, one, raise their visibility on the backs of what Charlie Kirk and the, you know, and the folks at Turning Points USA and other groups like that were doing, but then also to, you know, kind of really make some space for themselves and their ideas in the kind of Trump sphere, right? As Trump talked about immigration and made immigration kind of a central focus, they made sure that they were doing that. And not only did they push folks like Charlie Kirk to move even farther to the far right on this issue, but then they were also really good at, in so doing, in that kind of shitposting confrontational way, both online and in the real world, make a space for themselves amongst a lot of campus Republican groups. So now they've got a whole series of these organizations that have the, you know, imprimatur of college Republicans, but they are run by groypers who are using them to kind of carve out niches for themselves on campus and, you know, make their ideas more palatable.
Right.
You know, and so that's where we're at kind of with the groypers and how we got to where we're at.
Now, why exactly the groyper movement itself when, you know, from what you're telling me, this sounds like just another Identity Europa play. Like, they were all about hitting up the college campuses and trying to convince young Republicans to join their white nationalist ranks. Why specifically did Patrick Casey, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
Why did he make this move from focusing just on building his own organization into this broader groyper movement, do you think?
Part of it, I think, was that for Casey in particular, he saw that the kind of surreptitious activism on campuses, primarily that Identity Europa and later the American Identity Movement had, you know, was stickering and putting up placards and things like that, was insufficient at reaching a larger audience, right? They needed a platform which would give them more visibility. And someone like Fuentes, who's, you know, young, charismatic, you know, sharp on his feet, really provided him an audience, particularly online, that Casey and American Identity Movement didn't have. So combining those forces meant that they had a much larger pool of activists from which to draw, and it also allowed them to get into the game, you know, around the Trump campaign and, you know, those kind of larger issues. The biggest difference between what Casey was doing with Identity Europa and what the groypers are doing is wearing the MAGA hat, right? Putting on the kind of Make America Great Again facade as part of that, you know, appeal to normies.
Right.
You know, at least Zoomer normies, right? To get to that larger crowd. So that's, I think, one of the things that was different, right? Is that they don't full front hit you with the kind of biological determinism and hardcore anti-Semitism that Casey and Fuentes talk about later on, you know, down the line, but they do so in a way that talks kind of mainstream conservative issues around immigration, and racial preferences and some of those issues to try to move into that space and make their ideas, frankly, seem more legitimate. Right. It's that whole part of that, what we call the mainstreaming cycle. Right. It's trying to put forth an image that is, you know, going to be acceptable to a larger crowd than, you know, what Casey would ever be able to do. Right. So I think that's part of the reason. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. I think so. So what about let's actually talk about this right up top so we can get out of the way, because I'm sure people saw the thumbnail, and I'll pull it up on the YouTube feed here right now so people can see this image. Why this frog? What is it about this frog? It's for people who are not familiar, this is called the groyper, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's another thing that they, you know, that they cop from the Chans, I think from 8chan in particular. It was their effort to try to pay an homage to Pepe the Frog, but have, you know, something that was a little bit different. I don't know the etymology behind why that particular Groiper thing. But it was, you know, that's kind of where it came out of, was that whole appeal to that kind of shitposting culture and, you know, trying to appeal to that. Because as I'm sure you will see after this video is released, you will see a whole lot of traffic coming from Groiper types online. In fact, you know, the most we've ever seen at the Institute, and we've gotten a lot of hate mail over the years. Trust me, we have a whole wall of it in our office where we, you know, catalog a lot of it. We've never received the kind of massive online trolling that we've received after we put out that report from all kinds of groipers with, you know, some of the most awful stuff, you know.
Welcome to the show. This is Doomed with Matt Binder. Subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/MattBinder. You're on it right now. For the audio version of the podcast, doomedpod.com. Oh, patreon.com/MattBinder to support this show monetarily. I would really appreciate it. That way we listen, for every groiper that signs up and pays me $5 a month, I will do a groiper episode.
Oh, that's amazing. Pandering of the first class. That's awesome.
Now, and of course, your money will go to, I'll take your money and donate it to the proper organizations that deal with racial justice and all sorts of things that you guys hate. But let's talk about Nick Fuentes a bit, because he is a character in of himself. I mean, you spoke about how he has his own chat. I mean, he's basically the leader of this movement.
The nominal head. Figurehead, yeah.
Now, he's been banned from YouTube, right?
Yeah, in fact, he's worked with some other groipers to develop his own. He's got his own platform now, right? Because he's been banned from YouTube. You know, he's gotten, a couple strikes on DLive. So he's developed out his own platform. That includes a kind of Patreon-like subscription format to try to make a space where he's going to be less likely to be shut down in the future. And also, I think it's a, you know, pretty good profit generating revenue. You know, it's a revenue generating source for him as well.
Right. And to get, you know, a strike on a platform like DLive, one of these like third rate YouTubes, I mean, you got to be doing something really messed up, I guess. I mean, they let a lot slide.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he and his ilk have been doing quite a bit of, you know, sliding. You know, he also uses those channels quite often to do a Twitch-like stream of his playing Fortnite and other video games, where he'll get, you know, folks like Casey or Baked Alaska or, Jaden McNeil and some of these other folks to play along with him, in which they're, you know, they'll both, you know, talk smack to one another, but also kind of, you know, rant about whatever it is about the day. To kind of push those things forward, to kind of normalize the chatter around white supremacy in these forums. So that's why, in part, you know, I think he's rightly worried that he's going to eventually get kicked off some of these platforms, because the stuff that comes out of his mouth is often horribly racist, anti-Semitic, and, you know, encouraging a lot of folks to do a lot of really bad stuff.
Now, I see some people in the YouTube chat are still a bit confused about what a groiper is. So let's not move to Nick Fuentes yet. Let's put it this way.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
They don't like someone like Richard Spencer, even, the groipers. So what is the difference between a groiper and a Spencer-style white nationalist alt-right figure?
I think one is, you know, they're not going to adopt all of the traditional trappings of white nationalism. You know, they're going to use more, more normie words. And I think they're also cognizant of the need to play the game, right? They're really conscious about image and identity and playing to a larger crowd. Right. It is, you know, that's a really important aspect of this, right? Is that they're, you know, they're smart and they're, you know, and they're quick and they're good at playing to those, you know, playing to those crowds. And unlike Spencer, who, you know, is a millennial, these Zoomers aren't putting up with any kind of nonsense, right? They're not playing to the same kind of crowds. Although, you know, they have shared the platform with one another, you know, and they've, you know, both of them have appeared at the American Renaissance Conference and other white nationalist events. It's not like these folks aren't tied in to that white nationalist world. They just have less use for it than Richard Spencer did when he came up, you know, and started with the National Policy Institute and, you know, started running his show, right? It was a different time, and it's a different generation of folks who have different levels of connection to both the ideas and the personalities behind the white nationalist movement.
Right.
They're kind of doing this stuff, you know, on their own from what they've learned in the past. You know, I kind of think of what, you know, Fuentes is doing is like what David Duke was doing back in the, you know, after he went to school, you know, and was, you know, after he took off the armband, you know, the Nazi armband and, you know, stop marching around trying to, you know, advocate for gassing the Chicago Seven. You know, he developed that more mainstreaming approach and was trying to reach, you know, that general audience that, you know, the kind of esoteric Nazism that Richard Spencer was really into and liked to talk about on alternativeright.com and Radix and all those other forums is just not where Fuentes is, right? Fuentes and those guys are really interested in engaging every single day around current events, around what's happening in the world, and kind of trying to carve out a space with humor and with, you know, sarcasm and with, you know, vicious attacks on their opponents, to kind of try to make that, you know, make a bigger platform for them than Spencer ever, I think, dreamed of.
Right. And interesting that you brought up David Duke, and it's also somewhat interesting too, being that the Groypers are trying to be this sort of modern fascist group. But it seems like more so than the alt-right, the Groyper movement is actually trying to bring back the sort of ties with Christianity that the old school white nationalist groups had. Whereas, you know, the alt-right and the Richard Spencers out there, I'm not saying they are secular, but they spoke about this stuff more secularly than what the Groyper movement is sort of trying to do and what the old school like KKK tried to do. They tried to tie it directly to, you know, Christian fundamentalism and religion. And it seems like, you know, Fuentes is trying to do the same thing, which is interesting, obviously, as he tries to be more modern and more, you know, internet meme savvy.
Yeah, that, you know, that kind of appeal to tradition and traditionalism is part of Fuentes' brand. The thing that differentiates what the Groypers are doing from even the Klan, when they were trying to do something similar around tradition and traditionalism, is that, you know, for the Klan, you know, in all of their eras, women had a place, right? That they're, you know, while it was a super gendered, very patriarchal role, you know, as being the caregivers and the, you know, and the child rearers, there was a place for women. And in fact, the Klan in the 20s had a women's auxiliary and did all kinds of other things, you know, to reach out to women. For Fuentes and the Groyper crowd, they are explicitly misogynistic to the point of not allowing women's participation at all. In fact, Fuentes has argued quite often that, well, women shouldn't be allowed to vote or participate in any kind of politics. So that's, you know, an extreme position, even within amongst white nationalists, right? To carve out that kind of hyper misogynistic position is something that differentiates this new generation, particularly amongst the Groypers, from anything that's gone before them.
Right. I mean, that's an interesting point, because thinking about it, I can't think of any, excuse me, I can't think of any female Groypers I've come across. I mean, I don't think it exists. It sounds like it doesn't. I mean, I'm sure there's a few, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few on, you know, on the, you know, kind of on the outskirts, folks like Cassandra Fairbanks, you know, and some of those other folks. And
she's
then,
a
of
Groyper?
Course,
would she consider herself to be a Groyper?
I don't think she's a Groyper, but she's, you know, kind of on the periphery of them, and she likes to report about them and, you know, some of their activities. And then, of course, you have the extremely odd position within amongst the Groypers that Michelle Malkin has.
Oh, wait. Let's not get there yet. She's holding a special place during this discussion.
Okay.
Because this is a whole that we'll get to that in a minute. I just, okay. You can already tell I'm getting all. Jeez, it is. Yeah. To me, that is that's the whole reason you're really here, to be honest. No, but
okay, right
let's
on.
Let's now talk a little bit more about Nick Fuentes, even outside of the Groiber movement, who he was before this movement really kicked off. Because, you know, Nick Fuentes is someone who, you know, we're discussing the differences between a Groiber and the alt-right and Nick Fuentes and Richard Spencer. Nick Fuentes is someone who can't even navigate these platforms without getting banned, where as opposed to like someone like Richard Spencer is still on all these major platforms. I mean, when you think of white nationalism, like the current face of white nationalism, a lot of people think of Richard Spencer, and then, you know, you would assume like, oh, if that's him, then he'd be off of all these places. You know, he'd be banned from these platforms. But no, Spencer is on these platforms because he is more calculating and more careful about how he talks about things. But Fuentes is you know, just to the extreme of the extreme, really.
That's the thing about Fuentes is he's always trying to push that envelope, right? He's always trying to offend. He's trying to look for, you know, vulnerabilities of people. He's trying to look for buttons he can push. He's trying to make, you know, a name for himself by stepping on other people. And that includes, you know, the public fights he's had with Richard Spencer and a lot of the other folks in, you know, in the alt-right, trying to, you know, use them as a platform to kind of step his way up the ladder of visibility. You know, he knows that he's got to pick those fights to try to get attention and get visibility. I think part of that comes from, and I hate the fact that I shared this with him. We both, you know, in our younger years were debaters, right? So he comes from that background, right? When he was in high school, he was a debate nerd like I was. And he's used that to his advantage to try to use both his skills rhetorically as well as, you know, his quick wit to try to push out, you know, these other folks and make them, frankly, look silly, you know, by comparisons. I mean, he runs, you know, runs circles around a lot of these other activists, not surprising, but he is always kind of looking for those ways in which he can get under people's skin because he knows, I think, and he said it before, is that, you know, controversy and drama are what drive people to watch him and to, you know, and to learn from him, right? So he needs that kind of energy, you know. In that essence, he's kind of a controversy vampire. He lives off, you know, feeding off of the controversies that he creates each and every day. Yeah.
Now, how big would you say the Groiber movement is? Like, how many? Like, you know, because we were discussing beforehand how, you know, while all this was, and we were talking a little bit before we went live too about how there's so many groups right now who are sort of making a name for themselves, especially the QAnon conspiracy theorists who are, you know, many subgroups in there too. But, you know, as they're growing and, you know, I'm sure people are still thinking about the you know, the Boogaloo Boys are making a name for themselves right now as they show up at these Black Lives Matter protests. And, you know, people, I'm sure, still have the alt-right on the tip of their tongue, even though they've sort of fallen into the background as well. But the Groibers aren't as visible to the rest of, you know, to normal people right now, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, no, I think they've, you know, they've largely dropped off the, you know, the mainstream's attention because that most of the stuff they've been doing has been either on campuses or kind of behind the scenes, right? I think that the, you know, while the rest of the far right kind of tweaked out around COVID-19 and, you know, dove deeply into COVID-19 conspiracy land, the Groibers didn't do that so much. You know, instead they kind of focused on, you know, building up their platforms, you know, reestablishing their brand, you know, looking for ways in which they could get involved in the political discussion around the Trump campaign and, you know, and carve out a place on campuses. So that's where they've really been much more focused than kind of on stuff that's going to gain a lot of mainstream attention, which is also, you know, really difficult for because they are, you know, a challenging group. Size-wise overall, you know, the Groibers themselves as a network don't have a ton of people. It's probably, you know, 1,000 or so. But they've got big followings of folks who are at least, you know, tuning in to either be supportive, you know, and provide them funds, and or at least curious, you know, they're Groiber curious, if you will, about what's going on. And that's one of the things we always look for are those spots on that kind of conveyor belt of radicalization where people step on and kind of get further and further drawn along the line. And the kind of, you know, routine that Fuentes and some of those folks have on these platforms does just that, right? It's, you know, they could start by talking about Fortnite or about, you know, another video game, and people could, you know, start to, you know, kind of get into what they're talking about, and they get kind of further drawn farther and farther down the line. You know, so that's one of the challenges. And then, like I said, they've been really good at, you know, where they have a base, right? Most often where they've already engaged in the kind of fights around the Turning Points USA and the Charlie Kirk type stuff, where they've gotten some leadership there. They're now taking over College Republican chapters, right? And using that as a platform to further mainstream their image, right? They're wearing the MAGA hats and they're showing up at the College Republican events, but they're Groiper all the way. You know, so if you look at a place like, you know, at Kansas State, where you've got someone like Jaden McNeil, who's, you know, said some hardcore racist and anti-gay stuff, you know, he's, you know, he runs a group there called America First Students, which has a pretty big influence. And it was actually because of his response to the George Floyd killings, where he's posted some horrible stuff on Twitter, that the next morning I saw, you know, it was the first time and probably thankfully the only time that I'll see our work quoted on the sports page of the Washington Post, because in response to that, you had a group of K-State football players, you know, talk about boycotting the season because of the horrific nature of the language that he was using around George Floyd and, you know, taking a real strong stand for racial justice in that instance. It's really super powerful. And, you know, it was really awesome. We got a chance to talk to some of the players who were leading that charge, and they were remarkable in their poise and their, you know, their steadfastness about standing up against this kind of stuff. And they didn't want the university to be representative of that, you know. Right. While that's happening in one place, you know, in other places like in San Diego, the San Diego State University chapter of the College Republic is run by another Groiper. You know, who's, you know, really active in this, and the Groipers there, their dad is actually the chair of the San Diego Republican Party. Hmm. So, you know, they have got, you know, they are one of those classic examples of where they've got that pipeline from the margins to the mainstream.
Right. Now, I think one of the things to focus on is that for people who aren't familiar with the Groipers, and we were talking about it, you know, again, another discussion we were having before we went live, how the Groiper movement has sort of focused its ire not on the usual suspects. Like, this isn't the alt-right who's tiki torch marching in a town so that they could bother the people who live there. This isn't, you know, the Trump 2020 guys showing up at the lib protests to troll the libs. This isn't, you know, the Boogaloo boys showing up at a Black Lives Matter protest to try to spark a race war. This, the Groipers seem to be at this point so far focused on counter-protesting the right, people who aren't as right as they perceive themselves to be.
Well, yeah, it's true that some Groipers kind of individually or in small groups will show up at some of these counter-protests. You know, Fuentes and some of the others appeared at, you know, at some events in Florida early on in the, you know, after the killing of George Floyd. You know, they've shown up in other places with and in and around the kind of Boogaloo boy types. But by and large, yeah, they're most interested in pushing on the right and trying to get them to move further to the right and or absorb them, right? They're looking to find a place within that larger movement for them and their messages. So they, you know, really try hard to, at least when speaking to those crowds, speak the language that appeals to the lowest common denominator, right, where they can find some agreement, and which is also some disagreement with, you know, the likes of Charlie Kirk around, you know, issues around, you know, undocumented immigration or around, you know, the numbers of documented immigrants we let into the country, all of those kind of things, just kind of continually pushing them to the right, you know, outside and becoming an outside pressure group, you know, to such a degree, particularly around immigration, like what folks like Stephen Miller are doing from the inside. Well, he's pushing it on the inside, they're pushing on the outside and trying to create this balance, which is shifting everything to the far right.
Right. Yeah, I said earlier on the Majority Report when I was co-hosting that I plugged this conversation we're having, and I said how, you know, the Groypers might be the only people out there who dislike Ben Shapiro more than the left. I mean, they have really set their sights on some of these very well-known right-wing figures. It's pretty interesting to see. I mean, people talk about, again, bring up the left, people like to talk about, like, leftist infighting. The Groypers are leading the charge against the right.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's fun to watch to a degree. You know, that kind of infighting is always fascinating. But to the degree that the Groypers are winning those battles, that's really concerning, right? The fact that, you know, they can mop the floor with a Ben Shapiro or a Charlie Kirk, you know, rhetorically in the audience, you know, taking over events, kind of making their points known online and off. They have been really successful at doing that kind of swarm culture and taking over conversations and moving them farther to the right. I mean, already I'm, you know, seeing in my Twitter feed already, you know, a number of QAnon and MAGA folks showing up because they're paying attention. So you are, you know, grabbing folks all over. So, you know, the word is getting out there in MAGA land that, you know, you're paying attention to the Groypers. So that's
now,
awesome.
Now, is this what the Groyper War is? Like the great, whatever they call that. What is it? The Groyper War?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically them showing up at these events and trying to take, you know, take over well-known right-wing figures' speeches and things like that.
Yeah, and early, you know, in late 2019, early 2020, their whole tactic was to show up at events of like Donald Trump Jr. or Charlie Kirk or Ben Shapiro on campus and other places and try to just take over the conversation, right? They would strategically plant people in the audience to ask questions, to steer in their direction and kind of create havoc, you know, without having to take over the stage. They took over the conversation, you know, by being strategic about their the way they were attacking these folks, and really not only put, you know, both Trump Jr. as well as Kirk on the defensive tremendously, they also in each of these instances got tremendous amount of press coverage, right?
Right.
You know, they show up at these events, they generate a buzz, and that drives new members to their efforts, right? It generates a whole lot more people at least following what they're doing. And that's what they're all about, right? It's all about creating that buzz to get more followers, you know, to try to drive the conversation. You know, they're all into the kind of online metrics of, you know, of followers and ratios and all that other kind of nonsense, and will doggedly and relentlessly hawk people they disagree with, you know, until there have been a number of folks we've talked to who have been driven offline because of the kind of relentless intimidation that they get from folks once they've even mentioned some of the Groyper stuff.
Now, I think that will surprise some people, what you just said earlier there, where you mentioned how they even protested at a Donald Trump Jr. speech.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, they are willing to be critical of anyone if it'll create controversy, you know, create some buzz around them. And, you know, Don Jr. wrote something in his book around immigration that they weren't happy with. They called him on it. They tried to push him and, you know, push his agenda farther to the right. And we don't know if that was successful at moving the larger conversation, you know, inside the White House. But it clearly created some space for Stephen Miller to do all kinds of heinous stuff around immigration inside the administration. And that's what they've been really successful at, is making it seem more appropriate to have those kind of conversations that could include, you know, what we're seeing today in the kind of news about, you know, forced hysterectomies or putting kids in cages or any of the kind of self-deportation nonsense that the administration has been really driving home and pushing as part of their larger agenda. They're creating more political space for that in and around the edges of these larger conversations and making it more palatable, and particularly appealing that stuff to a younger generation who probably, without the the influence of these folks wouldn't be paying as close of attention to issues like immigration as they, you know, as they might to other issues that are more salient to their daily lives.
Now, how focused are they on particular issues? Like, what are, like, you know, obviously we discussed the tactics and the overall ideological differences, but in terms of, I guess, policy specifically, is there something the Groypers are more focused on than, say, other sort of white nationalist groups, the alt-right, you know, what is their overall focus?
Well, generally they have, you know, an overall political platform that runs across pretty much all of the issues. Immigration is the one that they've narrowed in on as the thing that'll get them to the mainstream, right? They know that the Republicans in general aren't as extreme on it as they would like. They know that it has some resonance. And with Trump out there beating the drums for, you know, nativism all day, every day, they think they've got a space for it, right? And I think they're right, right? That you start to see public opinion polls moving on this stuff amongst younger people because some of that conversation has been directed to them in these online spaces that didn't previously exist and it hasn't had the same kind of push in the past, you know. Kind of mainstream nativist groups like FAIR and Numbers USA and these other groups that have been, you know, beating the nativist drum for 40 years haven't found a way to get this issue into the conversation amongst Zoomers and young people generally. So this is an opportunity to do that in a way that is both, you know, racially as well as policy driven, right? They have both sides of it, right? They're able to, you know, engage in a kind of, you know, a larger white nationalist conversation about culture and identity and belonging, you know, and what that means. But they're also able to engage in it at a kind of a policy level, whether it be around TPS or around quotas or around everything else. They're smart enough to figure out ways in which to engage both sides of that, you know, which also makes them different than a lot of immigration, you know, anti-immigration activists of the past. They're, you know, they combine those two really successfully, at least in their, you know, in their online banter.
One thing I keep thinking of, you keep mentioning the Zoomer aspect of the Groypers, and I have to think that these guys have tried to start something on TikTok.
They have, actually. Yeah, Nick Fuentes got kicked off of TikTok. he did two things. One is he tried to use TikTok to try to reach, you know, that audience. And then he also did, I think he did a Zoom bombing of the TikTok CEO's quarterly briefing or something. And, you know, tried to, you know, again, create a, you know, to do a stunt to create a controversy in which he could find a space to, you know, talk about his nonsense. But yeah, they've tried a couple times in a couple different ways to get on TikTok, you know, as well as Instagram and, you know, the other folks where kind of, you know, younger generations are having those conversations. You know, they haven't been successful. Fuentes himself hasn't been successful getting back on there, but I know they're going to keep trying, right?
Right.
It is, you know, it's like a tube of toothpaste. You squeeze at one end, it just moves to another. They're always looking for the newest ways and the kind of different approaches to appealing to young people.
Now let's talk about the moment I've been waiting for. Let's talk about Michelle Malkin.
We need some fanfare for this. Oh my goodness.
Right. Yeah. Let me see if I got something here. One second. I got to have something. Give me a minute. I don't know if you'll hear it, but let me see here. Got a sound effect. Oh, DJ Airhorn, here we go. No, Michelle Malkin. Michelle Malkin has become a mother figure for these guys. I just think this is hilarious. They literally call Michelle Malkin
Wiper Mommy. Yeah, she has called herself that.
She calls herself that, and they call her.
Oh yeah,
the mother of Groypers, the Groyper, and I don't want to say that's actually wrong. Mother of Groypers makes it seem like it's some sort of Game of Thrones Daenerys thing. No. Literally, she's like their mommy, like that's what she calls herself. She's not Khaleesi of the Groypers. She's literally their mommy. Explain this to people who are like. Yeah. Their mouths have dropped to the floor right now.
Well, you know, for a bunch of these folks who are still living in their mom's basement, that's not surprising. You know, it is Michelle Malkin, for those of you who don't know, has been a hardcore nativist activist for decades, going back to the 1990s. She has published some of the most horrific things around anti-immigrant sentiment. She's written a book called In Defense of Internment about why it was good that we interned the Japanese during World War II. And she has continually appealed to that kind of white nationalist cross-section, you know, in a lot of the same ways that, you know, Ann Coulter has done over the years. But she has really courted that kind of crowd. You know, she writes for VDare, the white nationalist website. She has engaged, and that is the kind of niche she's carved out. And as a woman of color, she gets a lot of cred because it allows the folks like the Groypers to have, you know, a get out of racism free card. Like, how can we be racist? We, you know, have this person that we call mommy who's, you know, who's a woman of color. So how could we possibly be racist, right? We're just in this for the ideas, right? The reality is that as her role within the movement, she's number one, providing cover, but also then providing that kind of bridge to the larger anti-immigrant movement and helping kind of create space for this new generation of folks, because she kind of lost her position amongst older nativist folks when that kind of stuff fell out of favor to a degree and just kind of became totally mainstream. There was less of a need for Michelle Malkin, although she still has a syndicated column and still writes for VDare. You know, she wasn't getting the kind of traction that she was, but always looking to get back on the map, always looking to find a spot on, you know, Tucker Carlson's show or wherever she could to kind of find a place to, you know, pitch her stuff. She found the Groypers and the Groypers found her, and it was like a match made in heaven all of a sudden.
How did this even happen? How did they, where did this all start? I mean, she is someone who you mentioned all the terrible things about her, but she's also someone who has held a pretty, you know, mainstream in terms of like Fox News status.
Yeah,
and exactly. All of a sudden she's white nationalist mommy. And, you know, obviously the mainstream right wing doesn't want anything to do with her anymore, but she's become this figure. Like, it's in these far right circles. Like, the jump is, I mean, it's not that far of a jump, but it's still a pretty, big jump, because you're basically cutting yourself off from the cable news networks that will have you on. Even, like, you know, I haven't seen her in anything anymore. She used to be like a face. Yeah, it's incredible.
Well, that's the thing, is she dropped out of the scene, right? She dropped out of the, you know, the appearances on Tucker and on, you know, other Fox News programs. And, you know, she had kind of gotten left behind. It was primarily in the online world that, you know, she kept posting. You know, she's pretty active on Twitter, for instance. And her stuff would get, you know, retweeted like crazy by the Groypers, right? Kind of amplifying it. And then it just became, you know, it became, you know, almost, you know, kind of, you know, there was a synergy going on between the two, right? They would say, she would amplify them and lift up some of their stuff, and they would do vice versa until they actually had the first Groyper summit in Florida, about 8 or 9 months ago, and Michelle Malkin was the leading speaker at that event, right? So they, you know, had kind of courted her in the online world and, you know, amplified her presence, and then found a home for her within their movement, and then, you know, I kind of fully embraced her and started calling her, you know, and she started calling herself the Groyper mommy. Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, but it was, you know, a classic instance of someone who falls out of the mainstream and is looking, you know, looking for, you know, a place to have their voice heard. You know, it's kind of the opposite. You know, while she's falling down out of the mainstream, the Groypers are trying to reach at it, and they find themselves in the middle, and, you know, they start working together, you know, both to provide themselves cover for charges about racism and hopefully to try to glom on to whatever mainstream credibility that Michelle Malkin has left. And right. She's looking for it, you know, to sell stuff, to, you know, gain a wider audience for her stuff, you know, because she doesn't have one anymore. So she's now having to rely on them as a way to, you know, have an audience to speak to, because otherwise, you know, she wasn't getting the kind of reads and stuff she was in her VDare column, and a lot of folks had started dropping her syndicated column.
Right. Now, we talked a lot about the Groypers basically interrupting other people's events. But then you just mentioned now that they had their own sort of conference. Tell me a little bit about that conference. What was that all about?
Yeah, it was the first real effort to try to solidify what had been a mostly online effort, right? They held it down in Palm Beach after they had done things like harass Charlie Kirk at another TPUSA event.
Now, this was before the pandemic, right?
This was before the pandemic. This would have been late last year, like December.
Right. So a lot of their on the ground strategy, which seems to be completely how they operate, trying to gain attention by interrupting these events, seems to have been interrupted by the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's part of the reason why they went dark, right? Is they didn't have the same opportunities to engage in this kind of confrontation that they would have had if, you know, campus would have been back in session, and they would have had, you know, all these, you know, political campaign events to troll. I think it was at that time where they kind of retreated into, you know, building out their own platforms and try to figuring out a way forward, you know, beyond 2020, something that they weren't thinking about when they held the summit in December.
All right. So what was the summit all? It was just their getting together in real life for the first time? Is that sort of what it was, like a networking thing?
It was, you know, it was an opportunity for a lot of folks who knew each other online or in different spaces to get together for the first time. You know, one of those really important networking opportunities.
And you know, Ogle at Michelle Malkin in person for the first time, right? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's really what it was all about. You know, it was the opportunity to go to Florida to do that. They didn't have, you know, it was almost 100 people in attendance. They had speeches by Malkin and Fuentes and Casey, you know, and some of the other up and coming leadership. And they were really trying to lay a path forward for, you know, like we talked about before, one, that, you know, the kind of campus outreach, and two, that continuing to dog, you know, folks like TPUSA and Young Americas for Freedom and any of the other groups they could find a way to target to, you know, do that kind of trolling to create space for themselves. It was important because a lot of these folks, you know, kind of came out of, you know, these Zoomer types came out of more mainstream conservative circles, right? Some of them had been originally involved with Turning Points USA, but had been won over by Fuentes and Casey and some of the other folks, you know, so they have taken that activism that, you know, and the kind of lessons they learned about speaking to the mainstream that they got out of their TPUSA training, and kind of use that to kind of advance the Groyper cause. And that, you know, gathering down in Palm Springs was really that first opportunity for them to get together and really start hammering out together what was, you know, really at that point kind of a nascent network of individuals who only kind of sort of knew one another.
Right. Now, what is the future of the Groypers? I mean, I think there are people who are probably listening to this thinking, well, you know, it's good to learn about these guys, but everything, it sounds like they are out of the forefront. They are not in they're not even in the rearview mirror. They're that far in the shadows. But, you know, that sort of makes them more dangerous. I mean, what happens after the pandemic when they're allowed to go back out there on the college campuses that will once again be full of college students? I mean, I don't know how soon that'll be. It could be a year or two out, but it doesn't seem like Nick Fuentes and his group is giving up anytime soon.
No, they're not giving up at all, right? They've already, looked for opportunities to kind of take on the issues and engage, right? I mean, already, you know, just last week, Fuentes was on Alex Jones's show, right? Looking to try to, you know, further advance their image that way. They've also kind of engaged in, some really horrific stuff around pushing the conspiracies and the lies around Breonna Taylor and her death in Kentucky, and look for, you know, ways to be as trolly as possible to get people really pissed at them, frankly. Just like they did with George Floyd, and trying to use that to try to bring in more online members during this period until they get back to campus. But even though we're not back, you know, campuses aren't fully back yet, they're still working at taking over, you know, college young Republican chapters and using that as a way to get into a larger political context. They're also looking at kind of figuring out trainings and things that they can do to get more politically active, right? So they don't just want to remain shit posters, but they see themselves as finding a way to move, you know, more explicitly politically down the road, right? They're not going to stick to online posting, but they're learning how to, you know, from the current campaigns, how to engage in kind of political activities that move beyond just the kind of trolling to stuff that is going to have an impact in, you know, particularly local GOP races down the road once we get past this pandemic, if we hopefully ever do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're talking a lot about the QAnon congressional candidates right now. Who knows? Maybe a couple of years down the line, there'll be some Groiper candidates, as horrible as that sounds.
No, I have no doubt. I have no doubt that some of these folks have an eye on running for public office, right? We've already seen that with some of these folks trying to scrub some of their past statements online. We've seen them try to push back against the image that we've had. We saw them get really pissed about the report we released. You know, it's all part of their thinking about, you know, what they're going to look like 5-10 years down the road. And, you know, today's Groiper could be tomorrow's congressional candidate. We've seen that repeatedly, where folks have a history of kind of activism and this stuff, but have tried to clean up their image and move into the mainstream. And these folks, I think, are bound and determined to do that. They're still having trouble to figure out what their lives are going to be like in a post-Trump world. I think there's still a lot of debate and discussion about what that looks like if it gets to that point. Knock on wood. But they are, you know, there is still that focus on, you know, broadening, you know, being the mainstreamers that they are, while not giving up their kind of roots in the kind of, you know, more explicit white nationalist, misogynistic, homophobic kind of stuff that they, from which they come.
Right. Devin, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this tonight, because it is, you know, it's something to be aware of. And I'm sure I hate to say it, but I think a couple months, maybe a year or two down the line, people are going to be tweeting me saying, I should have went back and listened to your Groiper podcast, because they're now the Republican nominee or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, that would not be the first time that we've seen that kind of stuff. It would be. You know, it's great that you're covering this. I think it's, you know, particularly for folks who are not as insanely online as, you know, most of us are, they have no idea that this stuff is going on. It operates in a kind of completely different world than most folks are used to. So it's really good to start bringing this stuff to people's attention so they can start paying attention when this stuff continues to roil around in, you know, whether it's on campus or, you know, it's in an election, or if it's in a community where this stuff is going to start to play out, because we don't expect this stuff to stay contained in any one place. We know that they will continually look for new ways to push the button and, you know, expand the envelope in ways which will be really harmful if left unchallenged. Right. So one of the things we really thought was important about this report is making sure that we document in some of that hardcore anti-Semitism and bigotry from the jump, so that they can't, you know, try to clean up their record moving forward, and that they're on record, you know, with what they really believe and what they, you know, trying to cover up.
Devin Burkhardt of the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, you have a new report coming out shortly, I think you mentioned. Can you give people a taste of what to expect and where they can find that when it comes out?
Yeah, that's awesome. We've got a new report coming out called Amen's Army, Inside the Far-Right People's Rights Network. It is a report that looks at this burgeoning new movement, particularly out west, but frankly all around the country, of these folks who have created a new organization led by Ayman Bundy of Malheur's Takeover fame and of Bunkerville. You know, he is an activist that has developed a network that has 153 local leaders in 16 different states, and over 30,000 members now at their core, trying to promote an idea which fuses together kind of militia ideas with the kind of COVID non-compliance, anti-masking, anti-vaxxing kind of nonsense. Even a bunch of QAnoners are involved in it. And trying to use that to create an army of non-compliance around COVID restrictions, environmental laws, and everything else. So it's going to be, it's a huge deal. We've got profiles of all of the big leaders in this movement, as well as we've documented all 153 of those local leaders, and we have a sense of who they are and kind of where they fit into this larger picture. And it'll be available next week on our website at irehr.org.
I mean, you're gonna have to come back on. I'm sorry to say, Devin. I'm gonna have to force you back on the show to talk about that one.
Matt, you don't have to force me. Anytime you want to have me on, I am. You know, just give me a shout.
Look at that. Thank you so much, buddy.
It's a blast.
Yeah. Oh, you're too kind. I think you're overestimating this a little bit, but thanks again. Talk to you soon, and looking forward to reading that report when it comes out.
Ron, thanks, Matt.
Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I've been holding back this huge cough I'm about to do. Let me put my mic on mute. I don't know if I could do the full second half, but because I love you patrons, I'm going to try my best. So to support this show, patreon.com/MattBinder. You could also, if you're in the YouTube live chat, I will take YouTube live chat questions. I'll probably just take a few, do a short version of the second half of the show, but we'll still do it. And I will take those live chat questions, the super chat, I should say, questions. YouTube.com/MattBinder, drop a super chat. And I'll read them. What else? DoomPod.com for the audio version of the podcast. You can also subscribe to the new newsletter at misinfo.com. Misinfo as in short for misinformation. That is misinfo.com. Find me anywhere on social media at Matt Binder, or search Matt Binder if I'm not at Matt Binder. I'm at Matt Binder on most of them, but the few that I'm not, you can just search Matt Binder and I'm going to come up as the main Matt Binder. Because, I mean, really, I'm the Matt Binder. Anyone else is a... If there's any more Matt Binders out there, they are wannabes. Just held another cough back. Whew. It is like all of a sudden I got this like allergy cough, and it's like just tickling the back of my throat nonstop. I got really lucky on the Majority Report, which I co-hosted earlier today. You could watch that, youtube.com/SamCedar, where it wasn't really affecting me that much. But then after the show, it was just like full on. I'm like coughing all day now. What else? We're going to go to the second half of the show. Tell your friends about the show. Leave an iTunes review, Google Play review, wherever you listen to podcasts, leave a review on there. We're going to go to the second half of the show where I'll take your questions, comments, and more. And for everybody else who might be dropping out now for not joining us in the second half, see you all next time on Doomed.